This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
In 1967, one of the most anticipated TV series finales of all time aired. Viewers everywhere tuned in to find out who was responsible for the murder of the wife of Dr. Richard Kimball. That show was The Fugitive, and on the night of August 29th, 1967, an astonishing 78 million people tuned in to watch the tense finale of the beloved series. It seemed like a TV event and a viewing number that would never be beat. Could a single episode of a TV show get any bigger? 13 years later, we were about to find out. I'm Jamie Logie, and this is Everything 80s, a podcast that looks back on a decade that forever changed the way we dress, consume, and connected. And today, it's a look back on what, at the time, was the TV event of the century. It's a show that dominated popular culture and the public discourse of the time as everyone tried to figure out who did it. This is the story of Who Shot JR? On Sunday, April 2nd, 1978, a new series debuted on CBS. It was a unique primetime drama about a wealthy family from Texas. The series centered around J.R. Ewing, a Texas oil baron who will stop at nothing to achieve money, success, and power. J.R. manipulates and blackmails whomever he can to achieve that success. He wants success and power not just in the business world, but in his own personal life. His wife, Sue Ellen, has to suffer through a lot of this, and JR, not surprisingly, often finds himself in conflict, especially with his brother Bobby, but also Cliff Barnes, his true arch nemesis. Dallas starred Larry Hagman as JR, Patrick Duffy as Bobby Ewing, Linda Gray as Sue Ellen Ewing, Ken Kershaval as Cliff Barnes, and Barbara Bel Geddes as Miss Ellie Ewing. Dallas even featured Priscilla Presley as Jenna Wade. Dallas began as a short mini-series, which served as a pilot for a full series. But at first, there wasn't exactly a lot of faith in it becoming a full series. The first issue was that it aired late on Sunday nights, which wasn't exactly an ideal time slot. But it turned out that people were into it. Dallas was all about greed, power, and the exploits of the wealthy Ewing family. All of the drama quickly drew in audiences eager to watch the elite but dysfunctional family. After all, the tagline for the show in the first season was about a family ruthless in its quest for power and passion. If you're a fan of the series Succession, Dallas is its absolute predecessor. The early success of the miniseries led to a full season of 24 episodes for the 1978-79 season. But 1979 was a tough year for a drama as comedies dominated network ratings. Example, for June of 1979, the Nielsen ratings had Laverne and Shirley at number one with a huge 30.6 rating and a 46 share. That 30.6 rating is the percentage of all possible TV households or viewers in the country. In this case, the U.S. One rating point equals 1% of possible TV households or viewers. The share is the percentage of the audience that was actually watching TV at the time. So 30.6 is the percent of all possible TV households, but the 46 share means, regardless of the audience size, 46% of them that night were watching Laverne and Shirley. It's kind of a complicated metric, but this will be important for later on. Regardless of what the numbers were in 1979, network TV was all about comedies. Laverne and Shirley was at number one in the ratings, followed by Three's Company, then Happy Days, then Mork and Mindy. That was followed by another sitcom called Angie, then The Ropers, and MASH. In fact, of the entire top 10 shows, the only non-comedy was 60 Minutes. During that time, a drama like Dallas was popular, but not on the level of these classic comedies. But Dallas was just getting started. Despite being down at number 40 in the ratings that year, it still had a rating of 18.2 and a 32 share. Any TV show today would sell their soul for numbers like this, but during a time of only three networks and home video yet to take off, they were very, very average numbers. That was about to change. As we enter the 80s, the audience for Dallas seems to grow on a weekly basis. The third season started in late 1979, and in early 1980, ratings went up to 27 and 28 with a 45 rating share. The storylines were so scandalous, and viewers loved watching rich people behaving badly. There were storylines involving kidnapping, JR getting involved with his scheming sister-in-law, Kristen, and serious health threats facing the family. As we head into the spring of 1980, storylines on Dallas heat up. There is a murder. Sue Ellen has JR followed by a private detective. And while all this drama is going on, JR continues to build his oil empire. The penultimate episode of season 3 finds JR negotiating a huge oil deal with a profitable company. And during it all, JR is planning to leave his wife. And that leads us to the final episode of season 3 entitled A House Divided, the episode that will change TV forever. On the night of March 31st, 1980, more than 50% of viewing households tuned in to watch everyone up in arms against JR. JR's brother Bobby is disgusted with his brother's business dealings. Sue Ellen has had enough, quits drinking, and wants revenge on her husband's philandering ways. Besides his own family, JR's main nemesis, Cliff, also wants revenge. A house divided against itself cannot stand, and the episode ends with JR in his office late at night, shot twice by an unknown assailant. He falls to the floor, and the credits roll. Was JR dead? Did Dallas just kill off its main character? And most importantly, who shot him? It was the ultimate cliffhanger to a tumultuous and engaging season. Dallas had rapidly grown in popularity, had doubled its ratings since its debut, and was now number 6 in the highest rated shows on TV. By now, 40 million people in the US alone were tuning in to watch every week, and now the entire country wanted to know who shot JR. But they would have to wait. The fourth season of Dallas wouldn't premiere until November 1980, more than 7 agonizing months to learn the truth of one of the most shocking moments in television history. So why such a long wait? Was CBS trying to draw this thing out as long as possible to keep viewers on tenterhooks? Well, yes, but not exactly for that long. An actor's strike pushed the fall season into late November, months later than usual. But that didn't derail anything and only kept people guessing more and more. And when the fourth season finally debuted on November 7th, 1980, viewers still had to wait. The new season opens with JR sprawled out on the floor of his office. It turns out he's not dead, but close to it, and is rushed to hospital. The family gathers and hopes JR regains consciousness so he can tell them who shot him. But everyone seems to be a suspect. By the end of season 2, there were some 40 different characters on the show. And now, as the fourth season began, they all seem to have their own reasons for trying to take him out. Even though viewers didn't find out who did it in that first episode, a massive audience tuned in to the debut episode of season 4. When the ratings came in, it hit 38.2 with a gigantic 61 share. But was this the peak? JR's killer wasn't revealed. Would audiences stick around to find out? They would. Episode 2 of season 4 continues with the intrigue and speculation. Sue Ellen wonders if she might have accidentally shot him in a drunken stupor. Also, a gun is discovered in Cliff's apartment, and it's recently been fired. Bobby Ewing has had to take over the oil business while JR undergoes another operation, and that takes us into episode 3, entitled Nightmare. JR can't move, and Sue Ellen continues to have nightmares thinking she may have shot him. But then, there's a big advancement in the case. The gun used to shoot JR has been found, and the evidence points to someone in the immediate family. But six characters had threatened JR. Which one of them did it? All would be revealed next week. And this sets up episode 4 entitled Whodunit, and a television frenzy the likes we had never seen before.
Everything 80s will return after these messages.
Waiting for the fourth episode was a smart move by CBS. Fans and the public had been speculating for almost a year over who had shot JR. And instead of finding out in the first episode of the new season and then potentially stepping away from the show, they would have to stick around for a few more episodes. But ultimately, we were about to find out the question on everyone's mind: who shot JR? People who hadn't even seen the show were aware of the massive cliffhanger, and it brought even more viewers into that fourth season. It's interesting to think about how many more people might have jumped on board if prior seasons could be caught up on the way they are today. But TV back then was a one-shot deal, and you had to tune in at the right time or risk being completely out of the loop. But as episode 4 looms, the speculation has only intensified. Everyone is dying to know who shot JR, and finally, the killer is going to be revealed. The Nightmare episode garnered a huge 35.7 rating and a 56 share, setting off even more discussions in homes, school, and the workplace. Who shot JR was the definition of water cooler talk, and CBS completely leaned into the hype.
You mean to tell me that you don't have any clues, any leads?
Who shot JR? Don't miss Dallas Week starting Thursday on CBS.
The network constantly promoted the show. Dallas was already a hit, but this storyline had caught on like wildfire, the likes no one had ever seen. The thing is, as bad as JR was, audiences still loved him in that anti-hero sort of way, similar to Tony Soprano, Don Draper, or Walter White. Viewers were so invested in the show and the character of JR and were shocked that he was almost killed off. But the question remains, who did it? A lot of the signs pointed to Sue Ellen, but there was still enough tying other people to the crime. Cliff Barnes seemed just as capable. There was JR's mistress, Kristen, and what about his brother, Bobby, who hated the sketchy business dealings of his brother? There were so many side characters who JR had crossed, and they all seemed capable of trying to kill him. And that's exactly what CBS wanted us to think. The first few episodes of the new season were carefully crafted around situations, making it seem like every major character was the prime suspect. And CBS capitalized on all this craze with a load of merchandise related to the Who Shot JR episode. Coffee mugs, bumper stickers, and t-shirts all asked, "Who shot JR?" The New York Times called it the niftiest publicity gimmick since P.T. Barnum created the Fiji Mermaid by sewing together a monkey and a fish. It didn't take long for people to start wagering on who the culprit was, and this episode even crossed into the world of politics. The Los Angeles Daily News reported that President Jimmy Carter, running for his second term, joked at a Dallas fundraiser that, quote, "I came to Dallas to confidentially find out who shot JR." To be big in the 1980s meant an appearance on the cover of Time magazine. And in the summer leading into the new season, the character of JR Ewing appeared on the cover. The headline was "Who Done It?" and the magazine discussed the biggest cliffhanger of our time. Time magazine also shared how far this thing had spread, as some 300 million people in 57 different countries had tuned in. With the Who Shot JR storyline, Dallas was closing in on The Muppet Show to be the world's most popular TV series. Dallas and this storyline was obviously a big deal in North America, but also in England and Australia. Time reported that Network 10 in Australia had run out of "I Hate JR" badges. The network even announced that it hoped to bring Larry Hagman over, which resulted in their switchboard swamped with people requesting his private phone number. Dallas was also the number one show in Johannesburg, and in 1980, Time reported that, quote, "Cabinet ministers refuse speaking engagements on Tuesday night, knowing their constituency will be at home with the Ewings," unquote. It gets even crazier. In England, the BBC aired the final episode of season 3 when JR gets shot to an astonishing audience of 30 million people. In 1980, that was half the UK's population. The episode was such a draw that roads and pubs that night were virtually empty. A November 1980 United Press International report shared that even the Queen Mother voiced her regret at not knowing the name of the culprit. The shooting of JR even made the BBC evening news, and they continued to also promote the big episode with the reveal.
J.R. Ewing's been shot.
I need a list of suspects.
He gave the whole town ammunition.
Well, I see to it that this is the last crooked deal you ever pull.
I've put up with all the wheeling and dealing that I'm going to.
But who pulled the trigger?
I'll kill him.
Take a number. There are a few of us ahead of you.
In the UK, it didn't take long for the bookmakers to set odds on who did it. The favorite at 6-4 was Dusty, the former lover of JR's wife. Vaughn, JR's banker, had 4-1 odds, as did his mistress. Even JR's mother comes in at 8-1 odds. Across the pond in Las Vegas, the same thing was happening. The betting got so big that UPI reported that Las Vegas bookmakers had to shut down the betting under the order of the Nevada Gaming Control Board. Why? because it was not considered an official sports event. The anticipation for the reveal of JR's killer had gone viral before we even knew what that term meant. It's amazing to think what this would have been like in an age of social media. But this was obviously pre-internet and social media. Even cable TV was still in its infancy. Network TV ruled the roost. And with just TV, magazines, and newspapers, the hype still spread far and wide. With that hype, everyone wanted to get in on the action. People magazine released an issue devoted to who shot JR, and it featured a poll that readers were encouraged to fill out and send in. They even released a commercial promoting that issue of the magazine.
People asked 11 Texas celebrities who'd done it, and one of them agreed with me.
There's even this Who Shot JR poll. People's asking everybody to vote.
Everybody who follows Dallas should treat themselves.
Treat their family.
To this week's people.
Anything connected to this episode was big business. Dallas Mania was running wild, and not surprisingly, the cast was hounded for information through the summer and into the new season. Media outlets were looking for any bit of information they could get their hands on. But the truth was, or so the cast said, that they honestly didn't know, as everything surrounding who shot JR was kept under lock and key. Reportedly, 4 different endings had been filmed to keep the cast and the crew in the dark. But eventually, the big night came. On Friday night, November 21st, 1980, audiences across North America and then all around the world gathered in homes to finally watch. Some did Dallas theme parties because this episode was more than a TV show, it was an event. One of my most distinct early memories is a bunch of people at my house to watch the whodunit episode. I was around 5 years old and I knew what Dallas was as far as the name of the show, the theme song, and the fact I was hearing so much about it. It was obviously a show I didn't watch, but I just remember what a massive deal this thing felt like because my parents had people over to watch a TV show. And here's what they watched. 44-year-old spoiler warning alert. The scene is set with JR sitting outside in his wheelchair when Sue Ellen enters. He is fearful, warning her not to come closer or he'll call the police. All she wants to know, though, is where Kristen is. That's the sister-in-law and JR's mistress. And that's when Kristen makes her entrance. Sue Ellen shares that she has it all figured out and that Kristen was trying to frame her. But it's hard to believe what Sue Ellen says until she reveals she had shown up drunk at the condo the night JR was shot and she had his gun with her. But this is when she had run into Kristen, who offered her another drink. Placing the gun down on the table, Sue Ellen took the drink and eventually wandered off. With Sue Ellen's fingerprints on the gun, Kristen took it to JR's office, shooting him twice. It was Kristen Shepherd who had shot JR Ewing. Kristen then went back to Sue Ellen's and hid the murder weapon in her closet, hoping Sue Ellen would be pinned for the shooting. JR, finally learning of the revelation, is about to call the police. But this is when Kristen reveals she's going to have JR's baby. And upon learning this, he can't let her go to jail. Up to the Who Shot JR episode, the finale of The Fugitive, and then the last episode of the Roots miniseries were the most watched TV episodes ever. According to Nielsen, in 1977, the final installment of the Roots miniseries was watched by 51.1% of all American TV homes. The numbers for both the Fugitive finale and Roots were absolutely staggering. But Dallas would take things to an even higher level. Lee Rich, the show's executive producer, knew how big the event was and was hoping to hit similar numbers to The Fugitive. When the ratings came in, they almost didn't seem real. The Who Shot JR episode of Dallas earned a 53.3 rating and an unfathomable 76 share. On that night, in the U.S. alone, 76% of all TV viewers tuned in to watch. I think a 60 share was definitely expected, and probably even into the high 60s. But 76? It was astounding. I've always been curious as to what the other remaining viewers could have possibly been watching that night. The best I could find for the TV listings while Dallas was on was NBC running the show NBC Magazine with David Brinkley, and ABC looked to air multiple episodes of a sitcom called I'm a Big Girl Now, starring Danny Thomas and a young Martin Short. Ultimately, it was estimated that around 83 to 90 million people were watching the Whodunit episode of Dallas. This was the biggest television audience in history for an episode of TV. And keep in mind, that 76% is the viewing audience. When you count younger children, homes without a TV, or those just not interested, there was a segment of the American population not tuning in. The amazing thing to me is taking that high mark of 90 million people and considering the U.S. population in 1980, around 40% of the entire country, that's everyone, watched this episode that night. And there may indeed have been even more people watching when you consider the groups of people getting together, all huddled around living rooms everywhere. I asked my mom, and she figured there were at least 10 people at our house that night, as here in Canada, this episode also dominated primetime viewing. Between Canada and the US, the estimated viewing audience in North America was about 100 million. And let's not forget the other countries where Dallas was a huge hit. The Calgary Herald reports that some 350 million people worldwide watched the Who Shot JR episode. So, with the killer revealed, did things go downhill for Dallas? Well, not at all. With the mystery finally solved, viewers continued to tune in every week. The show obviously didn't hit the whodunit numbers, but continued to dominate the ratings. That fourth season of Dallas was clearly the number one show on TV, as it was for the 1981-82 season. In season 6, it slipped to number 2, only to return back to the number 1 spot for the 1983-84 seventh season. It went back to number 2 for season 8, then dipped down to the 6th spot for the 1985-86 ninth season. Even then, it was still averaging a rating in the high 18s, with now up to 30 episodes released in a single season. Amazingly, Dallas continued on for 5 more seasons after that, an incredible 14-year run for one of the biggest and most important shows in the history of television. The Who Shot JR episode of Dallas remained the most watched TV episode ever until another major event in 1983, an event I have a previous episode all about, the series finale of MASH. But even to this day, the Who Shot JR episode remains one of the most watched non-Super Bowl shows in history. In fact, in 1980, according to Sports Media Watch, at least 10 to 20 million more people watched Dallas than that year's Super Bowl. The Who Shot JR episode even beat the 1980 Super Bowl by nearly 10 ratings points. Dallas remains a turning point in the history of television. The Who Shot JR episode fully established the power of the cliffhanger, something we are more than accustomed to from pretty much every series we've been watching for the last 2 to 3 decades. Cliffhangers are critical to keeping viewers engaged, and shows continue to follow the model that Dallas set in motion over 40 years ago. People who weren't even alive in 1980 may at least be familiar with the phrase, "Who shot JR?" And if they aren't, they may know its modern iteration, the "Who Shot Mr. Burns" episode of The Simpsons. Besides big sporting events, awards shows, or major world events, there aren't many collective viewing experiences anymore, especially for TV shows. We just don't watch TV together anymore. Even for a big series finale like Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, or Succession, the viewing numbers are quite minuscule. The viewing audience for the series finale of Succession was under 3 million. These days, the time that a non-streaming show airs is pretty much irrelevant, as you can watch it on DVR or on demand whenever you want. The state of our modern viewing continues to amaze me, but watching a major TV series is less of a community event now, as everyone watches on their own time. Our only real concern is to avoid spoilers, but that makes it hard to create a real-time dialogue and discussion, as people may not be caught up and you don't want to risk ruining anything for them or yourself. The Who Shot JR episode came out during an interesting time. We only had a few channels and very few people even owned a VCR then. If you wanted to watch something, you had to schedule your time accordingly. If you had a favorite show, you knew when and where you needed to be. And on the night of November 21st, 1980, millions upon millions of people gathered in similar circumstances to take part in one of the most unique events in television history. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this, you'll probably want to check out my episode all about the series finale of MASH, another extraordinary night in the history of television. But besides that, I have a ton of other previous episodes waiting for you to listen to. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Everything 80s podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes. So thank you again so much for being with me here today. I'm Jamie. This has been Everything 80s, but I'll be back soon with a new episode. Don't you dare miss it.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.